Nora signs a typed will alone in her study. Her neighbor Paul is in the kitchen and never sees her sign a thing. 10 minutes later, Nora walks in holding the document and says, "This is my will. Please witness it." Paul and a second neighbor sign right then, a witness who never watched the testator sign. Is that will valid? Yes, and if your instinct said no, that instinct is exactly what this topic is built to retrain. The statute the exam hands you counts a witness who heard the testator acknowledge the will, which is precisely what Nora did in the kitchen. On this topic, you are not graded on what you remember. You are graded on whether you can read the law you were given and apply it. Here is the root. First, why this topic works differently, and how it actually appears on the exam. Then the core skill, reading a provided statute like a lawyer, and the method for doing it. Then a fast map of the wills, intestacy, and trusts terrain. And we run the method twice along the way, on a will and on a trust. Start with the thesis, because it reframes everything. On the old bar exam, you memorized hundreds of wills and trusts rules. The next-gen exam does something different, and honestly kinder. It hands you the governing law. Every trust's and estate's task comes packaged with the statutes, the rules, or the actual will or trust document you need. You are graded on whether you can read that law and apply it to a client's real problem, which makes this a skills topic, not a memory topic. Your job is not to recite a rule from memory. It is to find the provided provision, break it into its parts, and use it. And that produces the one habit that matters most on this topic. The provided text wins. Take that literally. If the materials give you a statute saying witnesses must sign within 30 days, you apply 30 days, even if the rule you learned in class set a reasonable time. Read what is on the page, not what is in your memory. Almost every point you can lose here comes from ignoring the provided law and reaching for a half-remembered rule instead. How does it actually show up? Trusts and estates is not one of the foundational subjects you must know cold. It appears as a provided law module. In the current window, the July 2026 exam onward, it shows up in at least one performance task on every exam. It may also appear inside an integrated question set. Nothing here is tested in a standalone multiple-choice section. In a performance task, you read a file. The facts, letters, memos, transcripts, and a library, the provided law. Then you produce a work product, a memo, a client letter, a draft document. An integrated question set gives you a shared scenario with materials and several short components. And the tasks themselves are the things a junior lawyer actually does. Advise a client. Work out who inherits. Spot a problem with a will. Draft a clause. So the core skill is reading a provided statute like a lawyer. A statute is really just an if-then machine. If these conditions are met, then this result follows. Reading one well is a repeatable process, and the skill lives in slowing down on the small words. And versus or decides whether you need every condition or just one. Unless and except hide the exceptions that flip an answer. Shall is mandatory. May is discretionary. Hunt down the defined terms, because codes usually have a definitions section, and an everyday word like child, or writing, or descendant may be defined more narrowly than you expect. Then work the method, and it has 7 steps. Read the call of the question first, so you know exactly what you must decide or produce. Locate the governing provision in the library. Break it into its elements. Check the definitions, exceptions, provisos, and cross-references. Apply each element to the specific facts. Note any default rule or exception that changes the result. And state a conclusion grounded in the provided text, citing the section you used. Now watch the method run on Nora's will. Her jurisdiction's provided probate code matches Uniform Probate Code Section 2-502. A will is validly executed if it is in writing and signed by the testator. Then one of two things. Either at least two witnesses sign, each within a reasonable time after that witness saw the testator sign or heard the testator acknowledge the will. Or the testator acknowledges it before a notary.
Break it into elements and match each one.
Writing? Yes, it is typed. Signed by the testator? Yes, Nora signed it in her study. Two witnesses who each signed within a reasonable time after seeing the signing, or after hearing the testator acknowledge the will. Paul never watched her sign. But the statute also counts a witness who heard the testator acknowledge the will, and that is exactly what happened in the kitchen. Both signed immediately. Every element is met, so the will is valid. And notice what we never did. We never asked what we remembered about witnessing. We matched each fact to the words the statute actually used. That is the whole method. And it works the same way on every provided provision you will ever be handed. Before we leave wills, one more provision worth knowing by shape. Uniform Probate Code Section 2-503 is the harmless error rule. Even if a document was not executed with all the required formalities, a court may still treat it as a valid will, or as a revocation or alteration of one. But only if the person offering it proves by clear and convincing evidence that the deceased intended exactly that. That rule lets courts honor a clear intention over a technical slip, but not every state has adopted it, which is precisely why you check whether the provided materials contain a provision like it before assuming a flawed will simply fails. Never assume the safety net is there. Which sets up the single most important demonstration in this topic. Take Nora's will again, exactly the same facts. But now the provided law is a Franklin statute, section 400. It says a will is not valid unless it is signed by the testator and attested by three witnesses, all of whom must sign in the testator's presence and in one another's presence. And Franklin does not recognize harmless error. Only two witnesses signed. So, under the Uniform Probate Code, the will was valid. Under Franklin's provided statute, it fails. Three witnesses are required, and there is no harmless error rule to rescue it. Same facts, opposite result, because the governing text changed. That is the entire game on this topic. Now, a quick map of the terrain, and the point of a map is not memorization. It is so you can find the right provided provision fast and know what to look for inside it. On the wills side, the recurring issues are execution formalities, holographic wills, harmless error, revocation, and revival. Then the components of a will, like incorporation by reference and pour-over gifts. Then capacity and undue influence. And construction. Construction is the biggest of those, and it has its own vocabulary. Lapse and anti-lapse, when a beneficiary dies first. Class gifts. Ademption, a specific gift the testator no longer owns. Abatement, which gifts get cut when the estate is short. You do not need these cold. You need to recognize the word when it appears so you can go find the provision that governs it. Then intestacy and family protections. When someone dies without a valid will, they die intestate, and the estate passes under a statutory default scheme. When someone dies with a will, the law still shields certain family members from being written out entirely. Both are pure creatures of statute. So the provided code controls every share and every dollar. The recurring issues there are the surviving spouse's share and the descendant's share. then the elective or forced share, which lets a spouse claim a statutory minimum instead of what the will left them. Then omitted spouses and omitted children, who arrived after the will was signed. And the small protective amounts that come off the top. Homestead, exempt property, family allowance. And one thing you genuinely must read rather than assume. Which representation system the statute names. Per stirpes cuts at the first generation below the decedent, alive or not, so each family branch gets an equal share. Per capita, with representation, cuts at the first generation with a living taker. Per capita at each generation cuts there too, then pools the deceased taker's shares and redivides them equally. Same family, three different answers. Then, trusts. A trust splits ownership of property into two jobs. The trustee holds legal title and manages the property. The beneficiary holds equitable title and receives the benefit. The person who creates it is the settlor. And the Uniform Trust Code is the common source the provided materials will resemble.
Uniform Trust Code Section 402 gives you a ready-made checklist for whether a valid trust exists. A trust is created only if the settlor has capacity and shows an intention to create a trust. There is a definite beneficiary, unless the trust is charitable or for the care of an animal or another valid purpose the statute allows. The trustee has duties to perform, and the same person is not the sole trustee and the sole beneficiary. Once a trust exists, the trustee owes strict fiduciary duties, and provided materials love to test them. Loyalty, acting solely in the beneficiary's interest, with no self-dealing. Prudence, investing as a prudent investor would, judging the portfolio as a whole and diversifying. Impartiality, balancing income beneficiaries against remainder beneficiaries. And the duty to inform and account. Changing or ending a trust is heavily rule-bound, which makes it a favorite. As a rule of thumb, the settlor and all the beneficiaries together can usually modify or terminate. The beneficiaries acting alone can terminate only if continuing the trust is not necessary to achieve a material purpose the settlor built in. A court can modify for circumstances the settlor did not anticipate. And for a charitable trust whose purpose becomes impossible or impracticable, CPRESS redirects the property to a similar charitable purpose. Watch also for a spendthrift clause, which blocks a beneficiary from selling or giving away their interest, and blocks most creditors from reaching it. But only if it restrains both voluntary and involuntary transfers. Read the clause. Now, a trap that is pure issue spotting. Not everything passes through a will. Many assets transfer at death by their own terms, outside the probate estate, and a will cannot redirect them. A client's will leaves everything to my sister, but the large bank account is payable on death to a nephew. Does the sister get that account? She does not, no matter what the will says. Payable on death and transfer on death accounts pass to the named beneficiary. Joint tenancy with right of survivorship passes to the surviving owner by operation of law. Life insurance and retirement accounts go to the named beneficiary. And assets titled in a revocable living trust pass under the trust's terms and avoid probate entirely. So whenever a task lists a person's assets, sort the probate from the non-probate before you do anything else. Two corners round out the landscape. First, administration. After a death, a personal representative, an executor if the will names one, an administrator if not, gathers the assets, then pays valid debts and taxes in the order the statute sets and distributes what is left. Personal representatives and trustees are both fiduciaries, so they carry the same loyalty and prudence duties. and powers of appointment, where the owner of property gives another person the power to decide who ultimately receives it. A general power lets that person appoint to anyone, including themselves. A non-general power limits the choices to a defined group. If the power is never exercised, the property goes to the takers in default. And each of these comes with provided rules, applied exactly the same way. Elements, facts, conclusion. A word on authorities. This episode named No Cases, and on this topic, that is not a stylistic choice. It is the point. There is no body of case names to carry in. The sources you will meet are the Uniform Probate Code and the Uniform Trust Code, or something written to resemble them. And they will be sitting in front of you when you need them. If you keep only three things, keep these. 1. The provided text governs, even where it departs from the majority rule you learned. 2. A statute is an if-then machine, so the small words and, or, unless, shall, may decide most answers. 3. Never conclude without pointing to the provision you applied. Now the traps. Straight from the examiner's favorites. The number one error is importing a memorized rule over the provided text. If the materials give you a rule, that rule governs. Never write, "The majority rule is," when a provided statute says otherwise. Close behind is skating past the exceptions and definitions. The unless clause and the definitions section are where the points hide. 3. Watch the effective date language. A provision may govern only wills signed after a certain date or deaths after a certain date, so confirm it applies to your facts. 4. Do not guess the distribution scheme. Read whether the statute says per stirpes or a per capita system. 5. Will substitutes pass outside the will? A residuary clause does not touch a payable on death account, a survivorship account, or life insurance proceeds. And 6. Never conclude without pointing to the provision you applied. An unsupported conclusion earns very little credit. And one piece of practical advice. Budget your time so you leave room to actually write the memo, the letter, or the clause the task asks for. Analysis you never got on the page earns nothing. Time for the quick check. And this one works differently because this topic has no multiple choice bank. It is never tested that way. So this is a worked problem straight out of the topic's own materials, run exactly the way the exam would run it. The provided law tracks Uniform Trust Code, Section 402. A settler, Diego, signs a document saying, "I give $50,000 to my brother Rafael to hold and use for the benefit of my niece Sophia's college education." Is that a valid trust or just a gift to Rafael? Pause here if you want a moment. It is a valid trust. Walk the four elements. Capacity, and an intention to create a trust? Yes. To hold and use for the benefit of signals a trust, not an outright gift to Rafael. A definite beneficiary? Yes, Sophia. A trustee with duties to perform? Yes, Rafael must manage the fund for Sophia's education, and is the same person the sole trustee and the sole beneficiary? No. Because Sophia is the beneficiary and Rafael is the trustee. There is also trust property, the $50,000. Every element is satisfied, so a valid trust exists. And notice, once again, how we got there. We did not recite a memorized definition of a trust. We matched the facts to the elements the provided section actually listed. Find the provision, break it down, apply it, cite it. That is the whole skill. 5 things to take away. 1. This is a skills topic. The law is provided,
and the provided text governs, even where it departs from the majority rule. 2. A statute is an if-then machine, and the small words carry the weight. 3. Work the method every time. Read the call, locate the provision, break it into elements, check definitions and exceptions, apply it fact by fact, and cite the section. 4. Learn the terrain, not the rules. Recognize ademption or per stirpes well enough to go find the provision that governs it. 5. Sort probate from non-probate before you distribute anything, which is why Nora's will was valid under one statute and void under another, on identical facts. The text on the page decided it both times. That closes out family law and trusts and estates. Practice this topic with more than 2,900 exam-style questions, free to start, at nextgenbargo.com. This episode is for education and exam preparation only, not legal advice, and we are not affiliated with or endorsed by the NCBE or any bar examining authority.